everybody. Welcome to the Transpose Podcast. I am the fabulous and incredible Robin Allura. With me, as usual, my cohort in crime, the equally fabulous and wonderful Stephanie Bree. And
She left out mouthful of chocolate right now.
Yes, Stephanie is chowing down on Easter candy right now, trying to get a little bit of a sugar rush going. She's going to have a lot to say, but Stephanie, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty dang good this week.
Oh, good. Good. At least one of us is. Anyway, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. This is episode number 9. Yes, I'm still counting.
Oh, wow. We made it all the way to 9.
9.
Guys, we have almost made more podcasts than Disney has made Star Wars movies. Actually, we already have.
Well, we've made more good ones than Disney has.
Because Disney's only made 3.
It's weird. Ish. Whatever. We don't care. We got a pretty interesting show for everybody today. We have a major topic that we're going to talk about. And when I say we, I mean Stephanie.
Mostly.
We're going to talk today a little bit about balancing religion and being LGBTQ. It's kind of deep. It's kind of important. But it's... Okay, well, it's more than kind of important. It's seriously important.
And it's extra relevant today due to the announcement the Vatican made this morning.
So good timing. No, we didn't plan that at all. That we just pulled that one completely out of our ass.
Well, that's because your witch over here knows what she's doing because she's psychic.
You heard it here, folks. Conversion therapy is another topic we're going to talk about today and why it's awful. And then we're going to talk about something that's not quite so heavy. I know, we keep with these heavy things. I don't know, like we're some sort of activists or something.
Halfway.
Okay. We're going to talk about comfort zones. And getting out of them and how that actually is a big part of being transgender, getting out of your comfort zone. And then we have a very different kind of top 5. And when I say different, it's not really that different. It's normal, as nerdy as we get. But this one...
It'll be fun.
It is going to be fun. This one was actually decided in our very first Twitter poll.
Yes, you guys. Thank you.
Yes. Which is good, because now that means when I've run out of ideas, all I got to do is go on Twitter and say, hey... Tell me what the hell to talk about. Mama's got nothing left. So, why don't we jump in?
Oh, wait. Before we go.
Oh?
Tell everybody your accomplishment.
Yesterday morning,
Robin got on Twitter and she had 52 followers. Today she has how many?
339.
There we go, everybody. That is deserving of a celebration. Everyone clap.
I don't know if it's deserving of a celebration.
My one-handed Homer clap.
Why that is a big deal, I hate social media. I have the hardest disconnect. When it comes to me and social media, I might as well be 90 because most of it goes over my head. But I think I've got this Twitter thing down.
She's got a good mentor.
I don't know about good, but we'll say adequate.
Who's got 1,500 followers?
Who reminds me she has 1,500 followers when I say, hey, look, I have 300. Oh, yeah, such a small number.
Oy. No, because I've got friends with way more numbers than that. Numbers don't mean shit, y'all.
I actually, before we get started, too, I want to give a small little shout out to last week's top 5 sponsor, the Blibbles. Did I say it right?
Yes.
The Blibbles. Amigo. It was a lot of fun being on the art stream last week. Sorry, Steph and I did not have our shit together. We will be coming back.
Yes, in full force.
In full force, with audio and all, now that we know what the hell we're doing.
Gay energy.
I have a funny story for you. I will tell you one-on-one later about how Stephanie lied to me.
Uh-oh. That's not necessarily 100% complete accurate.
It's like 97% accurate in this case.
It's those pregnancy tests.
Wow, she is on today, folks. So,
I got a lot of sugar in me.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to leave that one alone. Don't softball it, man. I like that, sweetie. So let's jump in. Get serious, Steph.
We are here.
And we're going to jump in. This is balancing religion and being LGBTQ. So Stephanie is the one who proposed this topic.
Yes.
I was super reluctant. Mm-hmm. This is not something I have any experience with at all. I am not religious in any form. I have a faith, but not in the traditional sense. I believe the universe works itself out if we let it do its thing. I do think, though, that this is an important topic. Because there are many trans individuals who are religious, like my girl here, Stephanie. Mm-hmm. So what I'm simply going to do is I'm going to let her take the lead and discuss this topic. So, Stephanie, the floor is yours.
Okay.
Don't slip.
Well, I got my good shoes on.
Oh, good.
Yeah, right. Okay, so the reason why I wanted to talk about religion and being LGBTQ is because it is literally an internal conflict those of us who are Christian and queer in any way go through, because you have a lot. We basically have a book that, depending on how you read it, people can make it condemn you. And that's very frustrating. But you also have organized churches. I'm Catholic, so we have an organized church structure that codifies discrimination against LGBTQ people. It specifically says if you're trans or you're gay or you're bi or anything of the sort, you can't participate in church things. You can't receive blessings from the priest. You can't get married in the traditional sense. There's all kinds of different things. And so today, we planned this before this thing came today, but today the Vatican came out and said that they will not bless civil unions because they can't bless sin. They will recognize civil unions, but they don't they recognize them in the sense that they're legal, and it's complicated. The church tries to obey the laws in the countries that you're in, but they won't. They don't. See, in the Catholic Church, marriage is considered a sacrament, which means it's a part of our faith. It's almost a central component of the faith, and so it excludes people like us. There's a lot of people who are now currently questioning their faith over things like that. I myself have struggled with faith. I will never lose my faith, and that's one of the things that makes it hard for me, because I had to come to terms with that I'm going to be outside the church that I frankly love with all my heart. And that's really hard for me, because it's just like my family, getting rejected by the people who were supposed to be there for me. And here's the thing, there are a lot of Christians, and there are a lot of non-denominational Christian groups out there who are very welcoming to LGBT people. And the thing is, one of the things we all have to go through, and there's other, it's not just the branches of Christianity, it's in Judaism and Islam and all of the Judeo-Christian faiths. The thing of it is, you have basically a structure that you have a very masculine God. Or he's portrayed masculine. And then we're taught that men are here above and women are down here below. Trans people, well, we don't fit into that. So we're excluded from a lot of things. I'm not getting into the specifics of the religion, but I can say this. I started going to the Catholic Church, and this is the reason why I wanted to talk about this today. I started going to the Catholic Church. I had been going to an Anglican church, Episcopal, which is the U.S. name for the Anglican Church. The Church of England, basically. And I really liked it. I liked their services, and I liked the way they do church. I was raised non-denominational, which is pretty much how most Christians in America are. So you go wherever you want. But I specifically started going to the Catholic Church because I wanted to purge myself of my transgender sickness. I was under the guilt that I was going to hell and I needed to cleanse myself of all this dirty, icky sin. And so I was going to confession and I was going to the priest and I was going through RCIA, which is the Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults, because I wanted to get accepted into the church and get initiated and then go get... I was going to actually go through all of the steps to become a deacon and then eventually take the vows and go be a priest, because I wanted... That was the only way I was going to be able to force myself to be a man, because that's what the church was teaching. That's what I thought you were supposed to do. Of course, my parents are also very religious. My mom was a Sunday school teacher. My dad was a deacon. So I was raised in a very, not strict house, but very kind of contradictory house, but we won't go there. But very religious, anyways. And so a lot of people in the LGBT community are constantly bombarded by people who will quote verses, and it's frustrating. I'm not going to get into all of the specifics. I'm going to go, I've got three, I'm just going to lay out three principle, biblical principles. I'm not going to give a sermon, but that helped me overcome it. First thing a lot of people like to use is this passage in Deuteronomy, which I ain't going to quote, but every trans person knows Deuteronomy. They know the verse. They've had it quoted to them 100 times. The thing is, the same people who quote that verse to you are the same ones who will go and eat pork and do all the other things that the Old Testament law says not to do, because the New Testament says you're not under the Old Testament law. But that one verse in the Old Testament law still applies only to us. That's one of the reasons why I was like, yeah, that's bullshit. And then there's, you know, Jesus himself said, the disciples said, Jesus, Lord, what is the biggest commandment? What's the most important commandment? And Jesus said, if you love your neighbor as you love yourself, and you love God with all your heart, that is all. That's it. You've kept the whole law. That's the basic tenets of Christianity. Every Christian believes that until they get into the what they can use against you. I'm not going into the any deeper than that. Because once I accepted those two things, I was able to go through my walk with God, and I went got on my knees and I prayed, and I was able to come to terms with he is not judging me because of what I am. He made me what I am. Everybody knows God, if God is in charge, and if God wrote the Bible and he created the universe, then he chose to make me trans. People will tell you that God don't make mistakes. He doesn't. He didn't make a mistake making me trans. He wanted me to be trans for whatever reason. Either it was to make me love him more, or maybe I could get Robin saved. I don't know.
But, that's a losing battle.
But I know it. In my faith, I know that he made me trans. So there's the reason why. This is the struggle. And it's because you have to find for yourself a way to accept your faith, and you have to find a way to be able to live your life. Some people go out and start new churches. Some people find a church that has that is affirming to LGBT people. Some people try to reform the churches they're in. And some people sit quietly in the pews and let the preacher condemn them to hell every Sunday, and then they go back anyways. That's what I mostly do. I go and do the what we call the liturgy. And then at the end of the liturgy, I participate in the Eucharist. And then whenever I find the time, I go to confession. I have not been confessing that I'm trans or have, you know, gay thoughts, because that's not, I'm not going to do that anymore. So I haven't been to confession in a while, because you're supposed to confess mortal sins, and they're pretty loose on mortal sins. They're pretty strict on mortal sins, I should say. I know a lot of Christians. I met a lot of people when I started coming out, was at Pride. And I met a lot of Christians there at Pride, and I was surprised to find so many Christians at a Pride event. And there were people who were like, yeah, well, you know, different churches, different faiths. But they all had one thing in common, and they were just like, well, we're all people, you know, we're supposed to love everybody. And I heard so many people say that. Now, I'm not picking apart any one particular denomination or singling out any denominations. There are some who are more hostile to people like us than others. There are some who it's actually written into their statement of faith that people like us go to hell and there is no saving us. Whatever. That's not in the Bible, and you won't find it in the Bible. But people will try to make verses that are in the Bible say it when it don't. It's a lot of things people like to do. They like to do what I call acrobatics with Bible verses. It's funky dory. Anyways, but let's really talk about faith. I was reading a comment today. The Vatican came out and said that they're not going to bless marriages, and somebody posted, why would someone still continue to go to that church or be a part of the Catholic Church knowing that they segregate us? And here's my reasoning for this. Because Jesus himself called the Gentiles dogs. He segregated people. He separated them. Now, he didn't discriminate, but he taught us, and he explains this to the Samaritan woman, that yes, God does favor the Jews and everybody else is secondary. That's built into the religion. But the thing is, whether you take a personal relationship with the Lord, which is what most Protestants will do, or you take it's a personal relationship, but it's also a lifelong commitment, which is what the Catholics primarily teach, it doesn't really matter because it's still a lifelong commitment, no matter which way you go about it. But you really, what it boils down to for me is there's a lot of things that are wrong with the church. There's a lot of pedophile priests running around molesting little girls. That is just as disgusting, maybe even more so, than denying us our civil rights. I don't know. I'd say it's pretty gross. So the church is not, and this is what the church teaches, and this is why I stay within the church. The church teaches it is not perfect, and it's not supposed to be perfect. It is not a place where you go, this is what they actually teach. You're not supposed to go to church and we all congregate. And I'm talking Catholic here. I can't talk about the other denominations. But you go and you're supposed to be, you confess your sins, and then we all participate in the Last Supper. That's what the Eucharist is. And they describe the liturgy as a meal. You come together, you have a little discussion up front. That's what we do when we say our prayers, we sing our songs, and then we go up front and we get the meal, the Last Supper. And then it's really supposed to be about, we're all sinners. Even the Pope is a sinner. And we all need Jesus' forgiveness. So it doesn't matter if you're going to confession because you think it's wrong to pick your nose, or you think it's wrong to flip off the TV when, you know, the Bill O'Reilly comes on, or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Sin is personal, and that is in the Bible. Because as long as you're doing what God says, Jesus said, keep my commandments. Those commandments, love your neighbor. Love God. Basically, be good to other people. You're keeping the law. So then sin is whatever you feel guilty. And that's between you and God. That's not my place to tell you that is or isn't sin. It's nobody's place to tell you how to feel. And that's why I continue to go to church, because it's like, yes, there are people in the church who are going to say these things and they're going to make things difficult for me, but I'm going to ignore them and I'm going to go and be in communion with the saints, because that's what I'm there for. I'm there to be in communion with the other saints, the Christians, living and the dead, those who are already in heaven and those who are here on earth still, and those in purgatory. Because that's what we're there for. So that's my view on it. That's why I continue to go, even though I know the church isn't perfect. Because the church isn't supposed to be perfect, and that is one of the foundational tenets of the Catholic faith. We are not perfect. We need a savior. So, and most Protestant churches teach the same thing, they just kind of take it in their own direction. So it really comes down to it's personal. It's my choice, and I choose to go. But I don't tell other people what to do. And that's what we're supposed to do. But that is a struggle, because it's our instinct to want to tell people you have to get right with God, because we're trained that we have to save everybody. It's our responsibility to save everybody. That goes back to even evangelizing. It's our responsibility to witness or preach to people. It really isn't. The commandment was the Great Commission was to go and preach the gospel and baptize new Christians. That's the extent of what we're supposed to do. You know, we're not supposed to judge. In fact, we're forbidden to judge. It says, judge not lest ye be judged. It says, if you do not forgive others, God will not forgive you. Those are actual things that are actually in the Bible that a lot of people like to ignore. So you can't blame the Bible or Christianity for a lot of the problems in the church. It's we have an imperfect church made up of sinners who are trying to elevate themselves above their sin by pointing out other people's sin, which is another thing Jesus said not to do.
But how do you balance that? That's what we're talking about here. Not just in religion in general, but how did you, so our listeners know, how did you end up balancing your faith in your religion,
mm-hmm.
and being a member of the LGBTQ community. What did you accept?
To me, it's the same as accepting that I can eat bacon if I want, or I can watch Freddy Krueger movies if I want, and it's not a sin. For me, it's accepting that the church doesn't get to decide what is and isn't sin. God is the one who makes that decision, and it's between me and God. So, like I just said, it was a real revelation for me that I had to decide what... You know, it is, like she said, it is tricky, though, because, you know, I can't say I have never lost my faith in God, but I've been jaded. I will say I was jaded by the church I went to before, which is why I started looking for a new church. So it's easy to get that way, and it's easy to get offended by a church family. I think what you really have to realize is exactly this. It's literally between you and God. It's nobody's business. There's so many passages in the Bible that say that. You can't judge. You're supposed to forgive everybody. And you are supposed to love everyone. You can't use the Bible to justify hating LGBT people. You can't. Because there's no way. Jesus said not to hate. Hate's a sin. Hate is a sin. That's a sin that's codified. So.
Well, I mean, okay. Like I said, I don't have a whole lot of opinion on this particular topic. I will say, as far as there is a little bit of there is something I'm guilty of when it comes to being trans and religion, and it's more of and I feel a lot of trans individuals fall into this trap. Some of us don't see it as you can be religious and trans. It feels sometimes, and it's not religion itself that does this or the church that does this. It's individuals that happen to get a microphone that make us feel this way, but it's religion versus the trans community. And that's not always the case. So there's a little bit on both sides. But you're right. We, at the end of the day, whether you're religious, you're not, you believe, you're Christian, Catholic, Baptist, Protestant, you're Jewish, you're Russian Orthodox, you're Muslim, or even Pastafarian.
Mm-hmm. That's Mario and Luigi, right?
No, they worship the flying spaghetti monster and wear colanders on their head. It's a very rich and deep religious experience. Anyway, not going to crap on anybody's
face. No.
But at the end of the day, what it boils down to is it's kind of... I really hate to quote other people, but it's kind of like Ellen says. Be good to each other.
Yeah.
That's all that matters. Be good to each other. You know?
And for those of you who are listening... who are Christian and you're still struggling, remember, if what the church teaches us is true, once you've had your salvation, there is no sin that's going to cost you that. Even if we're not saying that being gay is a sin or wearing a dress is a sin, but even if it turns out it were, it's no different than any other sin. All sins can be forgiven. So you decide for yourself if you want to pray to God for forgiveness or you want to decide for yourself if it ain't a sin.
Well, that's very insightful, mm-hmm. you know. And now that you've hijacked my show for the first half, I'm kidding. I'm trying to lighten the mood.
This next topic is rooted in religion, though.
It is. It does. It really is.
And I was actually surprised to learn that Sigmund Freud himself chimed in on this particular topic.
Well, you know what they say. He was the first in his field. But he wasn't very good till he got out of that field and got himself an office. Mm-hmm. Nothing. I'm sure everywhere right now there's a lot of people going, oh dear God, that was a bad joke. Stephanie's looking at me like, seriously, the hell is wrong with you?
I don't even get it.
There's a lot of things. I am not going to break down that joke.
No, don't. I'll Google it.
Oh, my God. Anyway, we are going to talk about something that's still kind of heavy. But it's important. And it's kind of been in the news a little bit lately as more and more places are shunning it and making it understood that, you know, this ain't exactly a good thing.
No.
I did a little bit of research on it this morning, and I have found there may be easily close to 100, if not more, organizations in the United States alone that say this is bad. Okay? And it's not just organizations like GLAAD or LGBTQ groups. This is like American Association of Psychologists. Mm-hmm. You know, these are some really, really smart people.
Which is why I brought up Freud a minute ago.
Right.
It's the people who are experts in psychology agree that that conversion therapy is garbage. It's not useful at all.
That's right. So that is what we're talking about. You know, this, we're talking about conversion therapy. I think, I'm not going to say 100% certainty. I think at some point, almost every trans individual has had either a run-in with this kind of thing, or in some way, even if it's a roundabout way, somebody offhanded suggested to it. And it is in different degrees
And it's not just targeted to trans people. It targets all LGBT people.
It does. It targets all LGBTQ people. But I do think that the trans community gets it a little more than the rest of the community does. Just because in some ways what we're going through is a little more, this is a bad word to use for what we're doing, but extreme. We're going from one thing to another.
Right.
In a lot of cases. So it's not just like your choice of partner. This is a complete change.
So let's pretend, you and I know what conversion therapy is, but let's pretend the people listening might not know.
Well, what's an amazing thing, Stephanie, that you mentioned that, because I have right here on my notes.
Notes. I love notes.
Exactly what conversion therapy is. Well, I didn't go too deep.
Right.
So conversion therapy is an unproven series of techniques that are designed to try to sway someone from such things as same-sex attractions or being transgender. Mm-hmm. Now, these techniques are, in theory, I just did my air quotes and nobody can see it, supposed to help push someone with those kind of thoughts back towards the old, outdated social norms that they're created around. A lot of these are faith-based. That kind of goes to, there's a lot of groups that still support this stuff that say you need to do this, otherwise you're going to hell. The biggest one that's still around there, and everybody's heard of it, is pray away the gay.
Yes.
Okay? These things are, now when I was reading this, and doing my research on all this stuff, I was kind of shocked what fell in between. I knew about faith-based stuff like the Pray Away the Gay, the ex-gay ministries, and I knew about some of the psychological things like therapists trying to convince people they're not gay or they're not transgender, but I didn't realize some very crazy stuff. Now, this is, you know, Freudian era, but as modern as the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. But things like doing a lobotomy on people was considered part of conversion therapy. There was one study where I saw that they tried to prove that they could change a person's homosexual behavior by giving them medications that induced vomiting while showing them same-sex erotic images. Right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is you're going to, in your brain, see same-sex images. And they went the gauntlet from what I was reading. I wish I hadn't read that article. Oh my God, my head hurts. Anyway, everything from two guys holding hands to... And this is another thing I'm going to digress into in a minute. But from two guys holding hands to, you know, full-on erotica. the study, as I noted while reading about this study, the double standard existed. Yes. It was all male things. There was no lesbian studies done. There were no lesbian imagery. So there's that double standard popping up again way back then. One, and we're going to use air quotes around this scientist that did one of these studies claimed he had a 58% conversion rate. Okay, published. It was a thing. It was great. Turned out he had one study with one person, and it didn't really work. So everything was kind of BS. In fact, conversion therapy is considered a pseudoscience, and for what people don't know what that means is it's not really science. No. It's kind of made up.
So I want to throw an example out there that I read about long time ago, way back when I was still considering if I was gay or trans or what.
Okay.
I knew I was different. And I remember reading, I watch a lot of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. In the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Billy Yost, who played the Blue Ranger, he is homosexual. And he was bullied off the show because he was gay. And he talks about how his parents, after he was bullied off the show, sent him to a gay camp, a Christian camp, to do exactly that, convert, to get him, to straighten him out, basically. And he wanted, every day of his life, he wanted to kill himself. And he contemplated suicide, and he was bullied at the camp. And then it took him a long time to get over that. Now, if you see the effect, you see how this hurts a person, it leaves permanent psychological scars. Now, I didn't get into all of my, you know, experiences, but one I will say is I was going, one of my previous employers paid for counseling because I was in the news and media business, and journalists need counseling because we're under a lot of stress. We experience a lot of death and bad things, and we deal with a lot of people who are undergoing stress. And the counselor that they sent me to was a faith-based therapist. And this was not helpful at all for me because she didn't want to talk about my condition, air quotes. She wanted to try to, you know, find out what was wrong with me.
Right. And that's the thing is, so...
I wasn't having none of that.
That's good that you kind of brought that up because that's so part of my next point as far as this goes is... You know, as of right now, to this date, there's no scientific evidence at all that kind of stuff works. It's all people who... It's kind of wishful thinking on a small group of people.
It's the same. It goes the other direction. You can't take a straight person to a gay club and expect them to come out gay.
Right. But the whole idea of conversion therapy, like you said, you had a faith-based therapist. It's... The whole idea and the why, when it's used on us, is it points out the biggest flaw to this, and that's that being a member of the LGBTQ community is a mental illness. Yeah. And we all know that ain't true.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Yeah, Amazon just recently banned any books that try to make that argument. They won't sell them.
Exactly. So Conversion therapy, however, is a seriously dangerous thing. Okay? So, while there is no legit scientific evidence it has a positive effect on a person, there is a ton of evidence...
Overwhelming.
...that it is negative...
Yes.
...and detrimental to a person. It can honestly lead to... They've done studies. It leads to a higher rate of depression. Mm-hmm. A higher rate of suicide. And there is also a lot of evidence... that it can lead to dangerous and self-destructive behaviors like heavy drug use. And we're not talking smoking marijuana. No. We're talking PCP, crystal meth, the stuff that messes you up. The stuff that in the 80s they were trying to warn you about with the egg and the frying pan commercials that fries your brain. So I kind of want to tell, you know, you had a therapist that did that, that was faith-based and didn't want to talk about what was wrong with you. So when I was in my 20s, I didn't really come into a whole lot of contact with conversion therapy, but I did kind of have some that was along that line. Because of the definition of what conversion therapy is, what happened to me is kind of falls into that. Early in my 20s, I had seriously considered transitioning. There's a whole big old long story as to what happened, why I didn't. But back then, you had to get into therapy in order to get any sort of hormone therapies. You had to have psychological therapists. Now, these days... that's a little more relaxed. It is more a suggestion, not a rule. But back then, it was a rule. I had actually gone to a couple of therapists where I lived at the time, which, spoiler alert, wasn't an LGBTQ-friendly town. In fact, we didn't really have that term yet. But when I went to these different therapists, they mostly wanted to try to talk me. Now, not that they wanted to convert me back to this thing, but they did try to want me they wanted to talk me out of it. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I'm making too rash of a decision. Maybe I'm making too big of a deal. And are you really sure that's really what you want? Which is a form mm-hmm. of conversion therapy. Now, I think a lot of trans individuals have had a run-in with something along those lines, closer to what I've gone through. But all that did for me, honestly, it just made me want to circumvent the whole system, because in my 20s, it was the golden age of the internet pharmacies. Don't got a prescription? No worries. Jump online. You can get it for cheap. And before all that stuff was regulated and watched like a hawk. So all I did was I just went around it. And I think there were others in my community back then that kind of did the same thing. And it was, you're not going to talk me out of it, so why do I need to bother? Let me go the back way. Which is also, I hate to say this, having lived it, but that's also very dangerous. Because you don't know what you're doing. You don't have an actual doctor to help you through this. And if you listen to our last episode... Wait, was the last episode the exercise one?
Well, it was one or the other.
It was one of them. Always do things with your doctor.
Yes.
I've learned that the hard way, you know. But yes, I mean, I think a lot of people have dealt with this. Unfortunately, they've had it in some form. Now, something else that most people are like, well, my therapist never did that. My therapist never did that. I kind of count something else as a hint at conversion therapy. And I've seen this in my short time on Twitter kind of a lot. And I've seen this on Facebook a few times. And even talked to a couple of trans individuals who actually had somebody that they cared about say this to their face. And it's like the audacity of these people. And they say, well, have you tried not being trans?
Yeah.
Yes! We yes. have!
Yes.
It's not working out for us. We'd like to return our subscription to not being trans.
Yeah.
Not working out, would not recommend.
Nope. No fun.
No fun at all. 1 star. Not even 1 star. Half no. star. So, that to me kind of falls under that because in a way you're telling people, you know, are you really sure? Which is what conversion therapy is. But at the same time, conversion therapy can also be those Bible camps, pray away the gay.
Yeah.
And things like that. Now,
even when going back to when I was going to the priest for guidance, they were trying. I went in there because I'm Catholic. I went in there with this. This is what I asked the priest because I knew I was trans. And I didn't struggle with, am I going to hell or not? I never struggled with that. I struggled with, if I have the surgery, do I have, because I was still under the, you know, you can't be gay.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, do I have to be attracted to men? Or can I still like women? Well, if I still like women, then that makes me a lesbian. That kept me from getting started. So I went to the priest and I was like, Father, what do you think about this? You know, if I transition and become a woman, does that mean I have to be attracted to men? Or if I'm not naturally attracted? He's like, first things first, you are not transgender. And then he tried to talk it out of me and he tried to explain to me why it was broken. And he tried to set up therapy sessions where I would come back and he would fix me and get me cured. And that wasn't happening. But this was when I started, and I did my own little research too, and I realized that when she said that the trans people do have it a little harder in this regard, I think she's right, because even the church, the Catholic Church, officially recognizes that it's okay to be gay, but you can't commit gay acts. They do not recognize it at all as okay to be trans.
Nope.
You are not even recognized. You are just flat out outside of the church's purview. That we can't help you until you get rid of the trans. If you want to be gay, just, you know, don't go looking at dirty magazines and don't go touching people and you'll be fine. Just go to church and then just, you know, eat the Eucharist or whatever, do your thing and then go home and then you'll be fine. Basically, it's the same as, like, you know, married couples. Don't go have sex outside of marriage or whatever. That's their teaching. There is nowhere for trans people. And a lot of churches are this way. A lot of religions are this way. And this is where a lot of it comes from. It's not just, well, we want to take someone who's homosexual and make them straight. We want to take someone who's trans and force them into whatever their, you know, their non-conforming gender is.
Exactly.
And that's, I want to stop and kind of go back to the beginning, very first episode, and kind of remind people what being transgender really is. It's not a medical condition, people. And it's not like you just wake up one day and it's a choice. You don't just say, you know what, I think I want to wear dresses and that makes me trans. It's an internal misalignment of your outward sexual expression and your inward sexual identity. Or
gender identity, not sexual.
But you know what I mean, gender identity.
Because that means something different.
Okay,
now.
But well, we're not talking orientation, but you know what
I mean. I know.
And the thing is, you can feel it inside. You don't feel it in your parts. It's in your brain. It's in your heart. You feel it inside.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change that. You can't change who you are. Now, some people, a lot of Christians will say, well, you know, it's just like if you're addicted to pornography, that's lust of the flesh. Well, what if you're addicted to being trans or whatever? And they try to, you know, that's one of the routes they try to go.
You can't be addicted to being trans.
No, because the thing is, there's no trans act.
No.
I mean, we know, and my Anglican priest pointed this out to me. He said, before America was founded, when the church, I mean, in England during the Middle Ages and in the Renaissance period, it was the men that wore dresses and robes and skirts.
And wigs
they put
and
on powdered makeup and wore long hair. And now that's considered feminine. So there is no inherently feminine, inherently masculine traits. It's society. And the thing is, if we lived in a society like, let's say, Japan, where the men wear long flowing, can wear long flowing robes if mm-hmm. they want, and can grow their hair long and have the ponytails and whatever, we would still be misaligned. We still wouldn't be masculine in that culture's
right. definite. We've said it before in a couple of other episodes, there's so much more and so much deeper things going on to transgenderism. And by the way, once again, I'm saying it that if you use that word, you owe me $5. Transgenderism, then putting on makeup, putting on a dress and a pair of earrings. It's so much deeper than that. And there is so much more to it. But that is how a lot of people think of it.
I was in first grade. The very first time I was reading a book, and I read the book as the main, it was written in first person. And so you were reading the book as the character, and the character was describing her thoughts. It was a female character. And somebody in the book, you know, was talking about the female character, and they said her, you know, or she, you know, they said she, you know, she's the one you want. And then they were talking to her. And in my mind, it just felt right. I felt like that felt right. I knew, at 7 years old in first grade, reading a Snow White book, I knew that in my mind felt right. And I tried it on, and it just did something in my brain that I can't explain.
Yeah. I mean, that is both typical and atypical. I mean, there are a lot of individuals like us who do that. There's a lot of individuals who struggle with that. There's a lot of individuals like me that did struggle with it. Mine's a little more complicated, but it is what it is. But going back to the conversion therapy thing, I got one more thing I wanted to say, and I want everybody to understand that conversion therapy is bad.
And there's a lot
it's
of government,
outdated.
There's a lot of governments that are trying to ban it, including several states.
That's the thing. Is this is something that thankfully is being condemned as hurtful and negative. And it's being banned. And I think there are always going to be groups out there that want to change LGBTQ individuals with some sort of unrealistic science or faith-based procedures that we're always going to have to deal with. Why? Because those people just never go away. History's full of them. We're never going to be rid of them. We're always going to have them. It's just, as a culture, what point do we stop listening to them as they are the foreground and now they're just in the background?
It's like that SNL skit from a couple weeks ago where they were interviewing someone who was pretending to be anti-trans.
Mm-hmm.
And in her little monologue, she's all, well, I don't support trans people because I believe in science. Men are born with penises. Women are born with vaginas. We believe in science, except for when it comes to global warming and when it comes to COVID-19 and when it comes to how round the earth is and where does the sun go.
Yeah, science is...
But as soon as you start talking transgenderism, all of a sudden, you've got these people with a fifth grade education quoting science books from 35 years ago.
Well, the Big Bang Theory, the episode we watched the other night with, Samwise, I forget his name, the actual
actors.
Yes. The great thing about science is everybody can have their own opinion.
Yes.
No! That's not how science works!
You're gonna totally hate me.
I love that quote.
You're gonna hate me in about 20 minutes.
So dumb. Anyway, but I think this is something that, thankfully,
yes,
the LGBTQ community can see conversion therapy itself slowly being eradicated.
And for those who are still, you know, listening and trying to make sense out of it, neither one of us have actually been through what the really nasty stuff.
No.
We've only had the
fringes of it.
Yes. And even that's bad enough. Yeah. So if you've been through something worse, well, Ron, let us know. We'd love to hear about it.
But absolutely.
Also, it's disgusting.
It's disgusting. It should never have happened. My personal belief, anybody who forces that on another group should be stoned to death, but that's just me. Oh, no! Did I just promote violence? No, I don't promote violence. Anyway, moving on. Y'all can't see it, but Stephanie's like, oh, dear God, what did she do? Oh, you know what I did. Anyway, let's move on to a little lighter topic.
Okay.
But it's something that is a little just as important.
Mm-hmm.
Comfort zones. Yes. Now, I've talked to a couple of other transgender individuals, and I kind of talked to you a little bit about this. You had a little bit of a heated, we're going to say a spirited view.
Yes.
To me, being trans, part of being trans, and it's very, very lowest, very kind of, it's not like the whole thing, but a part of being it is learning to operate outside of your comfort zones kind of create new ones.
Well,
in a way.
Yes,
comfort zones, I want to start this off too by saying, mm-hmm. comfort zones aren't bad, but you can be limited and you can be held back.
Yes.
By them.
Because it's a balancing of overcoming your fear, which is what she's talking about, getting out of your comfort zone, but then getting comfortable doing the things that you really want to do that actually bring you true joy and happiness, which is what we're pushing for. This is where we're going, I hope. With this.
Exactly. Yeah, this is exactly what we're going for. It's courage. And I don't know about you, but I have a lot of people that are not transgender that I came out to in my circle of friends that they kept telling me how brave I am for going through this. And I love you all to death for those who've told me that, but you guys are just so wrong. I am the most chicken shit coward there is.
If we were brave, we would have transitioned when we were 2.
Yeah, or I would have stuck with it when I was 20. But we all grow up, and this is kind of how it ties to being trans. We all grow up being pushed into certain directions and form habits that help us hide and cope with the situation we're in. You know, those of us who are trans women, you know, males to females, we do quote-unquote masculine things around our buddies to hide our pain. And then we do things behind closed doors. A lot of times we feel shame for those things when we really shouldn't, to help us cope with that.
Can I tell a story? An example, short one.
Go ahead.
So I lived in a camper in between 2 very conservative redneck families. And I wanted them to, I was in my house, I was presenting as Stephanie, but out in public, I was presenting as the other guy whose name you don't speak. And so I wanted to grow a garden, and I knew gardening was not necessarily feminine, but I wanted to do it. I wanted a flower garden, not just a veggie garden. And my neighbor, who's very, very manly, very masculine, very conservative, he was also growing a vegetable garden. So I was mimicking him. You know, I was trying to grow my vegetables the way he did them, and then I was also making sure that I went out and I was mowing the grass, and then I was buying bricks, and then I was barbecuing, and doing all the things men are supposed to do so that they would see me outside doing manly things so that they wouldn't go sniffing around my, you know, feminine quarters. That was one of the things I had to do regularly. I got my dad to buy me a lawnmower because I wanted to go out and mow the grass myself because men mow the grass. And I was trying to, as I said, I was going to the church and I was trying to do more manly things. And then finally I got sick of it and decided I'm going to do the 40-year-old woman thing and pay the neighbor kid next door to mow my fucking grass. Which is what I did.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, that's just a one example, but hated it. I really hated it.
Exactly. You wanted to have the flower beds and things like that.
Or do what we did Saturday, where I put on the, you know, the shorts and the cute outfit and went prancing around in front of the guys at the nerd store.
There you go, you know? I think the whole comfort zones...
I didn't prance, by the way.
I may have strutted. No, thank God.
I may have strutted.
getting, you know, and comfort zones, those comfort zones like you talked about where we're... And the ones that we're kind of pushed into... They really become second nature. And I think part of some... there's a lot of things that the trans community... We try to overcompensate sometimes when we step out of these comfort zones. And we try to... Because things are thrown at us as arguments, whether no matter what it is, being a masculine thing or a feminine thing. And it's not thrown at other groups that way. It's thrown at the trans community this way. Only guys like this. Only girls like this. Well, number one, that's just bullshit in any community.
Yeah, like, why is it okay for tomboys to wear jeans, but it's not okay for a trans woman to wear jeans? Because you don't look feminine enough.
You just said something about mowing the yard.
Yes.
Men mow the yard. Well, our neighbor kind of thinks that way. The man mows the yard. You tell that to AJ and see if you still have teeth.
Yeah.
She mows the yard. Mm-hmm. She gets out there. She pushes the lawnmower. Mostly because I can't. I'm not physically capable of doing it. It's not anything like that. But yeah, I mean, it's not... It's in our culture as a dude thing.
Yeah.
But so is football. And now we have girls playing football.
And I say this with all the love in the world. AJ is a woman. She's a pure woman. And she's more man than the both of us ever were combined. According to stereotypes, I should say.
I love AJ to death. You know that. But yeah, she could break both of us and not break a sweat.
Yeah.
But
she's a woman, and that's what we're going. That's what we're getting for. You can be a woman and still.
She's one of my role models.
Yeah.
You know, we almost bought her a mask, one of the face masks, you know, for the COVID stuff, and I thought it was the most appropriate for her. Unfortunately, it was sold out, so we didn't get one. But it said, "She is style, she is grace, and she will punch you right in your face." And that's AJ in a nutshell. She will. She will be, you know, if she's got to do the chore, she's going to do the chore, whether it's manly or not, you know. Hell, she can lift more than I can. Hell, she can lift more than I can and me. You know, there's you know. But we got to get out of those comfort zones of, and we're, a lot of trans individuals are programmed that way, that, oh, well, now I'm a... And we go the wrong... We overcompensate.
Yes, we do.
Is what it is.
Yes.
You know, we have... Okay, we didn't like this thing. I'm going to use an example that I actually had somebody, a good friend of mine who's a transgender individual I talk to a couple times a day online, said to me that... she was trying to be her true feminine self, but she was having a hard time because things like romantic comedies, she was forcing herself to watch romantic comedies. She was forcing herself to watch things like My Little Pony and get into the pink and fluffy and yay, pretty. And it just, as she told me, made her want to throw up. Because it's too much.
I know cisgendered women who are into football and don't give two fucks about My Little Pony.
Absolutely. But it's thrown but at us. But
they're the damn sexiest women you'll ever meet.
Absolutely. And they... And
whoa, the, shit.
And she just broke ass. A chair. And what's gonna... What we do is we overcompensate sometimes. We say we like these things and we do these kind of things. But we honestly... We're trying to be feminine and we really... Some things we just really don't like. You know?
I did that recently myself. I started really trying to force myself to watch romantic movies because I wanted to get in the feminine mind space. And then I realized that, you know, while I did enjoy The Notebook, I was watching a lot of movies I didn't enjoy because I was trying to force myself into that. Now, I did secretly like watching figure skating. And I would sit and watch with my sister watch figure skating and make fun of her for watching it while I'm secretly sitting there enjoying it. I did that a lot. Because she would always be like, the figure skating's on. Oh, God, this shit again. Grab the popcorn.
And you're... Yeah. And I think we've all kind of done that. If you had sisters, or you grew up with sisters, or you grew up with female cousins or anything, you kind of always do that. You know, if you're trans individual, you kind of like, oh, yeah, no, that's kind of stupid. Or that's just too girly and da-da-da. But secretly, you're on YouTube watching the... Oh, my gosh. You know, things like that. I think as far as getting out of our comfort zones as trans individuals, getting out of them and getting out of them properly is one of the most nerve-wracking things about transitioning. Okay? I have a hard time with some of it sometimes. But that's just the way it is. I think that's getting out of these comfort zones is kind of what makes us transgender in a way, because we're put into, if you're a trans woman, you're put into a male quote unquote comfort zone. If you're a trans man, you're put into a female quote unquote comfort zone, and you get into those things and you pretend to do those things, but you're not really happy. And I think getting the opportunity to be your true self and step out of those leads to happiness. Plus, there's a lot of frustration with just not being happy.
Yeah, and when you're first starting out, when you're baby trans, and you're just getting out
there. I hate that term, by the way.
Well, I'm not got baby fever. Leave me alone. Anyways.
I've seen that all day on Twitter. Baby trans and freshly hatched.
Okay.
Oh, dear God.
Well, that's because a lot of us play Pokemon and we have our eggs.
Oh, my God. Aren't y'all grown-ass individuals?
Shut up. Me and my Pokemon alone.
Oh.
Anyways, no, what was that? The fuck was I saying? Thanks for interrupting me. Oi.
You said something about being baby trans.
And... Yes, baby. Okay, so, Yeah, when you're baby trans, a lot of people like to go out and you'll go to the mall... In your disguise, I'm going to call it. And you're going to buy, or Target, Walmart, wherever, and you're going to buy your clothes, however you do it. Maybe you go with a friend and have them buy, put things in your cart for you or whatever. And then you're going to go home and try things on because that's where you feel safe. And then you might slowly start, okay, I'm going to buy women's jeans and then start wearing women's jeans out in public. And then maybe I'll get a... You know, maybe I'll buy a women's T-shirt, and you start a lot of trans people start easing into it, and then there's that breaking point where you finally decide I'm going out as a woman,
and you're done.
And then that's it. Your hair, makeup, clothes, boots, and you're at the mall, and presumably no one can tell. And if they can, well, you know, good for them.
Yeah, that's the thing is I don't think a lot of people understand. I know I kind of had this issue with AJ. And bless her heart and bless the hearts of a couple of other people who really tried to support me when the first time I started going out full-time public dressed in women's clothing was, they always said the same thing. Just go out there, be yourself. If people can't handle it, fuck them. Whatever. But I don't think you guys, that the community, well, the allies, I don't think they can really understand 100% how hard it is to step out.
Yeah, because like you're not
that.
Just...
Because that's a huge step.
You're not just trying to find something that you can feel comfortable wearing. You're looking for something that you can feel comfortable being seen in without presenting an image that you're not maybe ready for or you just haven't come to terms with yet.
Right. So definitely smaller steps are the way to go.
Yesterday or Saturday was my very first time wearing shorts. Girl shorts.
I was proud of you.
Tight, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah.
I've been wearing a lot of dresses, a lot of skirts. And in fact, it was only like 2 weeks ago I started wearing dresses without pants. So, you know, progress.
Exactly. So, you know, comfort zones.
Oh, and the dangly earrings. I have to point that out. I bought dangly earrings and she scolded me for it. They were fun.
Can I actually give my real opinion?
Okay.
They weren't dangly earrings. They were god-awful, gaudy pieces. They look like they belong outside as yard art.
On the ears of a witch. Thank you very much.
No, hanging from a tree.
Well, they were actually more like
they were
sun actually catchers. More like wind chimes. Yes.
Wind chimes. That's what I'm thinking. And it's like, good Lord, girl, those things got away a ton.
Just go to @thespiderslair on Instagram and look at my pictures.
And see, that's over the top. That's overcompensating.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
But
good Lord.
Fine. Oh my God, they were fine.
Our definitions of fun differ greatly, sweetheart.
I had fun.
Going out was fun.
Yes,
we had a great time. I think I freaked a few people out, but it's cool.
Well, for all this, she scolds me for having baby fever, and then she stuck me in the back seat of the car with the baby.
What?
For like an hour, and I'm sitting there like,
oh my God, she rode with my nephew. He's 2.
But he was so cute.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Baby E is cute as hell.
I just think...
It should be illegal for anything to be that cute. He should. Shelly. Elliot's too cute.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just too cute. Anyway, all right. I think we kind of rambled.
Are we ready for our top 5? Goals?
I think it's time to get into the top 5.
You tell them what it is. I got to grab another soda.
Oh, dear God. She's grabbing another soda. And she's out the door. And there she goes. I don't know if she falls because she just turned the corner so I can't see her. Anyway, our top 5 as picked by our wonderful fans on Twitter, which... Please, if you aren't a fan of us on Twitter, get on Twitter. We love to interact with you. We love to talk to you.
I'm
actually
polls.
Enjoying it.
There will be more polls every week.
Yep, there's going to be more polls because I've run out of ideas. And yes, that's a soda, not a beer. This week's top 5s. I'm so happy for this one. I wanted to do this one last week, but we didn't. This is...
In a World Gone Mad.
Movie quotes.
That was my best impersonation of the movie guy.
No, that was...
That was bad.
Sweetie, I love you, but no. No.
I can't do my guy voice anymore. I've been
doing
too long.
I wish I couldn't. Anyway, so we're going to do the top 5 movie quotes.
Our top 5 movie quotes.
Our top 5.
Not the top 5. Get it right.
Well, I don't know. I mean...
Because then my list would have to trump yours. I have the greatest movie quote of all time on my number 1 spot.
Man, we'll see about that.
I promise.
Anyway...
I promise.
I will say this about mine.
Okay.
My list... These movie quotes are ones I actually use a lot in conversation.
Preachy and profound.
Wow. Okay. But I do sometimes change some of them, like with my number 5, which you'll find out in a minute.
I don't know which can to drink from. One of them's got spit in it. One's got soda.
Oh, dear God. Just anyway, let's start it off.
This one. This one's got the soda.
Oh, dear God. When did we become a shit show?
6 weeks ago. Episode 3.
So that explains the dog and the pony.
Yeah.
Great. Whoa, all right. Whoa. Let's start with your top five before I lose all interest
number
in this.
Number five, I am so glad that you brought him up. The guy from who was on The Big Bang Theory.
Uh-huh.
He was also in Stranger Things. He was Bob on Stranger Things. Before he was Bob on Stranger Things, he was one of the Hobbits. Samwise something or other on The Lord of the Rings. No, I'm not a Lord of the Rings fan. Shut up. I like the movies. I don't obsess over them. But way before all of that, back when we were all baby trans, or before we were baby trans, when we were babies, he was in The Goonies, and he had one of the greatest quotes ever. I'm not going to set the stage because it would take too long, but they're down under the city, and they're dripping, and there's water everywhere, and they're covered in goo, and they're losing hope, and he's the lead character in the show, The Goonies. And he's giving them this big inspirational speech, and he basically sums it up with this last little bit when they get all fired up and let's go find the buried treasure. He says, down here, it's our time. It's our time down here. That's it. It's a very straight to the point quote. He's basically telling them, the adults are up there. Fuck them. We're down here. We get to be kids just today before we go and have to piss our problems away tomorrow.
That's a pretty good one. That's a really good number five.
I love the fucking Goonies, y'all.
That's a good one. That's a very good one. Now, Steph's probably going to be a little mad at me because my number five comes from, well, what she calls
PBS in Space.
The greatest the greatest movies of all time. And we have some...
Oh, it's not PBS in Space?
It's no.
Oh, thank God.
I could do a whole thing just on those. Okay. It comes from a movie that we've had a series we've had discussions. Now, I changed this quote, and some of you who are listening, you know that I have changed it on you when I have used this.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
She's breaking other people's copyrights, buying her transgenderism.
Hey, you owe me $5. And that is... from Star Wars, we're talking A New Hope.
Ooh.
Princess Leia. Aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper? Uh-huh. I have twisted that to, aren't you a little fat for a stormtrooper? And aren't you a little stupid for a stormtrooper?
Yeah, fine. I love sassy Leia.
But I use that one a lot. Just when I really... It's mostly one that I go to when I don't really have a comeback. It's just simple. And just easy. What's your number four?
Number four comes from my favorite movie of all time, A Nightmare on Elm Street. And it is not Freddy Krueger. It's actually Nancy Thompson. And she's talking to Glenn, her boyfriend, who's supposed to be protecting her before she goes to sleep to go chase Freddy out into the real world, because that's what she's going to do, bring him into the real world and kill him. And she tells him right before she hangs up the phone, the last thing she says to him, right before he dies, Johnny Depp dies, I know, oh my God. She says to him, whatever you do, don't fall asleep. That sounds like a cheesy ass quote, but in a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, it is the moment in the movie where everything gets real, because 5 minutes later Johnny Depp is a waterfall of blood.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's still
sailing the high seas.
It's still cheesy as hell. All
but
right.
It's the way she says it.
Yeah. So my number four is one I do use a lot.
I promised I wouldn't quote Freddy all five spots.
Thank you. And it comes from my favorite Star Trek film, Star Trek VI. And I've used this both as a quip to a boss trying to tell me what we're going to do and I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. I've used it jokingly. I've also used it to turn around and throw somebody's negative argument back in their face. This is from Kurtwood Smith, who everybody's going to remember as
Red Foreman.
Red Foreman.
He's also
that
the bad
70
guy. He's also the bad guy on RoboCop, in case you didn't know.
Well, they can figure that out. Anyway, in Star Trek VI, he plays the president of the United Federation of Planets. And he's talking, I'm going to give a little bit of background to this one. He's talking about how the Federation and the Klingon Empire have to work together to save the race that is known as the Klingons. Okay? And right now, at this point in their history, the Federation and the Klingons are right on the edge of war, and both sides are contemplating attacking the other just to gain the superior advantage. Okay? And the quote that he says is, "Let history show that just because we can do a thing, it does not mean we must." In this case, he means just because we can attack our enemies or treat them as our enemies does not mean we must treat them as enemies. And I think that's a very poignant thing. I've used that on my at my former place of employment when the boss came up and said, "Oh, hey, by the way, we need to reset this entire department. Just because we can do a thing does not mean we must do a thing." I ended up resetting the whole department anyway, because I lose that argument. Anyway, so, moving on. Number three, Stephanie.
Well, you know I can't tell you my number three without responding to your number, whatever you just said. Because I said it was PBS in space, but what y'all don't know is it actually stands for... what was that word I used earlier? Preachy? Preachy bitches in space. Alright, my number three comes from a horror movie, surprise, surprise, that is actually the horror equivalent, if you will, of The Goonies. It's called The Lost Boys, and it's one of the greatest quotes of all time. I am a millennial, but before they called us millennials, they had another word for us. We were called the MTV generation. Now, Freddy Krueger, in the Nightmare on Elm Street films, he quotes MTV a lot. MTV comes up a lot in those movies. He's seen as the MTV horror villain, in fact. But in The Lost Boys, they walk into their old man's house, and the little boy, Corey Haim, the first thing he says is, "There's no TV. Have you seen a TV? I haven't seen a TV. Do you know what it means when there's no TV? No MTV." That's the greatest fucking teenage angst of all time, because how can you survive? This is back when there was music on MTV. And he was sitting there like, "Oh my God, I can't live without MTV." I have a shirt that says I can't live without my MTV also.
Okay. Yeah. Lots of MTV back when they were good and played music.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have ridiculousness and crap.
That was supposed to be a Freddy Krueger quote, but I took all my Freddy quotes off except for one.
Okay. Good. My number three comes from one of my... Well, they all come from my all-time favorite movies. So if you kind of heard our one about the favorite movies, you kind of know this a little bit on this list. But it is a family-friendly way of pointing out things aren't going your way. And I have caught myself saying this both around family, around children, around myself, when I'm all by myself. And something kind of goes wrong, and it's not so wrong that it's going to set me off crying. But it's kind of one of those, "Oh my God, really?" One of those seriously moments. This comes from, somebody that I do admire a bit. I wish I got to know him. He's really distantly related to me, but is no longer with us. And that is the great Adam West.
Oh.
And this is from the 1966 Batman, the movie. There's a few of you that grew up with me probably listening that know this quote because we used to say it all the time. And the scene is, there is a explosive device and it's going to go off and there's no time for Batman to defuse it. So he is running around Gotham Harbor with his explosive device trying to find a safe place to dispose of it. Meanwhile, he keeps running into a marching band, a lady pushing a baby stroller, nuns, lovers in a boat, even little ducklings. And he just stops and he looks around and he says, "Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb." I think that's a pretty... Some days when you're having a bad day, sometimes you just can't get rid of that bomb. And for those of you who haven't seen the movie, he did. He's Batman. He got rid of the bomb. Yes, safely.
He always saves the day.
He saves the day.
Even when it's Superman causing all of the havoc.
Exactly. So that is my number three. Stephanie.
Did I just reference Batfleck? Shoot me.
That is a crime. I should, but we're not going to.
Sorry, y'all.
I don't want to have to find another co-host, so.
I'll give you references.
All I got to do is go up on Twitter.
There you go.
Say, who wants to be my co-host now? No, just kidding.
Tori, if you're listening.
You're number two.
So, my number two also comes from a Star Wars film, like one of yours previously, but mine's a... I'm not going to say it's a better Star Wars film without getting shot, because you know it's episode one. But I think it's a better quote than whatever you said about stormtroopers being short and staunchy and whatnot. Not that isn't a better moment, but this is one of those moments in The Phantom Menace where it actually, it's one of those rare moments in a movie that it does have pacing issues. It has tonal issues. It is a serious movie with some really shitty comic relief that really undermines a lot of the seriousness. But it is still laying the stage for the fall of the Republic and the eventual rise of the evil empire and the destruction of the Jedi. And this was a quote that was used in the trailer, but it was misrepresented what it actually was doing, because it made you think that he was starting the war, because it's Palpatine that says the quote. Palpatine is a senator in this movie, but he eventually becomes the emperor. And it's right before the Battle of Naboo. And they say, what do we do about the primitives in the swamp? And he just flat out says, without even blinking, he says, wipe them out. All of them. In the most sinister Palpatine way. Only it doesn't work. But it was an awesome quote. And it's one of the reasons why I love The Phantom Menace. Because if you could trim, there's about 6 minutes of that movie. If you could cut around it, you'd have a damn good movie. You just kind of have to go with what we have and accept it. But once you get to Naboo, the Battle of Naboo, from that point to the end of the movie, it's a fucking Star Wars movie. And it's a good Star Wars movie from that point on. It's a little iffy. Up in the beginning, but...
Okay, all right.
Of all the Star Wars movies, that's my favorite quote of all the Star Wars quotes.
I am happy that you did quote Lord Sidious and Palpatine... And not Jar Jar.
Because that would be... not that stupid.
Let's say, that's racist. That's just racist as the day is long, girl. My number two is one, again, I use it kind of as a counterpoint. And this one kind of gets twisted and misquoted a little bit. I kind of had to look it up to make sure I did the right one. But this one comes from, I don't know how you would describe this movie other than the title. If you know the title, then you know the movie, and that's The Princess Bride.
Oh, thank God you didn't say Spaceballs.
Oh, Spaceballs. I'm surrounded by assholes.
There's no good quotes in that movie.
Are you kidding? That whole movie is
Do not hear the sarcasm in my voice. The Queen anyway, of Sarcasm missed that.
Anyway... there is a character in there played by Wallace Shawn, I think that's his name. I'm drawing a blank. But he always uses the word inconceivable. And at one point, another character looks at him and says, I do not think that word means what you think it means. That's my number two. I use that a lot. People will say something stupid and I'll usually twist it a little bit and go, I don't think that means what you think it means. But I think it's pretty apropos.
Yeah.
And pretty self-explanatory. So, Stephanie, we've come down to our number ones. What is your number one?
You have to go first because mine is the greatest movie quote of all
time.
No, you have to go first.
I am not screwing up the flow. You did that once already. We're not doing it again.
You can't talk about quote.
Bullshit.
Okay, so getting back to the Nightmare on Elm Street MTV generation, in part three, The Dream Warriors, the greatest film fucking of all time, there's a character whose name is Jennifer, and Jennifer is set stage. They're in a mental asylum. Freddy's killing them all, but he's making it look like suicide, so a lot of people think the teenagers are just troubled. Jennifer's thing is she shoves cigarettes into her skin to wake herself up. and because she smokes, but she also wants to go to Hollywood and be a celebrity. And so she's sitting in the TV room after one of her friends dies. Anyone who's listening to this show knows what the quote is, if you've seen the movie. And the TV starts messing up, and Freddy Krueger turns himself into the TV, and his arms come out of the TV, and he says, this isn't the quote, but this is, I'm setting the stage. He says, this is it, Jennifer, your big break in TV. That was the quote, that was the line that was scripted. And Freddy Krueger shoves the girl's face into the television, but then Robert Englund ad-libs a line right before he shoves her face in, and he says, welcome to prime time, bitch! And he kills her! And everybody has quoted that fucking line a bajillion times, but it is awesome. Because Freddy Krueger's the king of quotable one-liners when it comes to horror characters. Now she's going to come along and be like, well, mine's more...
You call that the greatest
Schoolhouse
line?
Rock!
Yes. The greatest line ever?
Yes, I said of all time.
Of all time.
Of all time.
Girl,
You need to watch more Freddy Krueger's.
You need to watch less.
We're not having this discussion.
No. My number one comes from one of my all-time favorite movies. My number one all-time favorite movie.
This can't be the same quotes you did when we did our top five movies. That's cheating. You were supposed to come up with new quotes because your whole top fives were, these are my most quotable movies. You tricked me.
I didn't trick you into shit. You didn't want to do this. I told you that was what was going to happen. And then you said no. So we went with another top five. And then the Twitterverse.
Say your line.
Voted for it. So, hush.
Well, you've already picked three from your top five, your previous top. I'm like, geez, you're just repeating the same damn name.
No, I'm not.
All right, I'm listening. I'm legit sorry.
Of all time, go back and listen to that episode. I think, what was that, the first episode?
Mm-hmm.
Where we did our top five movies?
I think so.
My top number one movie is Clue. That movie has a special place in my heart. I'm not going to tell the story. But one of my favorite parts of that movie, the whole premise of the movie is everybody's being blackmailed because of something. All the characters. Colonel Mustard, Professor Plum, mm-hmm. things like that. Michael McKenan at the peak of his career in movies was in this film, and he played a character, I believe it was Mr. Green.
Okay.
And Mr. Green's secret that was being blackmailed was homosexual photographs of him with another man. Okay, so Michael McKenan goes through the whole movie joking about hiding being gay. Okay? And he's not. It's all a ruse. My favorite line of movies, and I've used this a few times just to kind of end a conversation, is the very last line of that movie. As Michael McKenan holsters his pistol and gets ready to walk out, and we've had the big reveal and everything, he stops and he looks at all the characters and says, now I'm going to go home and have sex with my wife. And the movie ends. And I'm sorry, sweetie. That is a way better line.
No, it isn't. That's a prime stupid time. Quote. That's what bad. Every guy on the planet does. That's not. Welcome to prime time, bitch.
Excuse me. I use that.
Yes, other people that aren't just guys use it too. But I'm just saying...
Whatever.
That's all.
Anyway, I think we bored them enough for today.
I wish you would have at least not used the same. Well, you did. You did pick a Star Wars quote. But I think that was just the throw. So.
Here's a quote for you from Goldmember, the Austin Powers. There is no pleasing you.
That's right.
Anyway. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this experiment in insanity. We hope you all enjoyed this show. Like I said, this is number 9.
Tell them how to get to you on the Twitter.
On the Twitters. I am on Twitter now. Followers. At Robin Allura.
Yes.
Follow me. I am figuring this Twitter thing out.
At her all the time.
At me all... Wow, I almost said it. That was bad. She set me up, y'all. She set me up.
I'm not the queen of this show.
Oh, shit. I almost walked into that one. But yes, at Robin Allura. I want to, those of you who are listening to the podcast and are already following me, if I don't follow you back, give me a minute. I'll get there. I'm so far behind on following and followers that it's kind of nuts. But also
send us duck pics. That's what you're supposed to do, right?
Duck?
DM duck pics.
Don't send me, unless it's of an actual duck. I'm okay with duck. What the duck? Anyway, also follow the show at TransposePod on Twitter and Facebook. I'm going to give out our email address.
We have an email address?
We do.
How do you get to us?
TransposePod@gmail.com.
Oh, yay.
Do not send duck pics to that.
Please.
We have privacy filters and people who want to see it. Thank you all for joining us. What are we talking about next week? Do we have any idea, or are we making this shit up as we go?
Well, we were going to talk about conversion therapy, but then we kind of wrapped that into today, so...
Should we wait on the other topic, or are we almost ready for that one?
Why don't you just go ahead and take the lead?
I just asked you if you were ready for that
one. Go for it. We're talking about toys!
Oh, dear God, I wish you hadn't said that. All right, episode 10.
Toys.
Probably one everybody's been waiting for. We are going to discuss sex and relationships and how important they are to the human experience and transgenders and how the difficulties involved in that. She's going to make a lot of comments that are snarky, and I might slap her a few times.
She's going to talk about her sexual experiences. She has partners. I'm a virgin, so minor with the gadgets.
My head hurts. I might change this. Anyway.
We're talking about love and sex.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Follow us on social media. Tune in next week. Again, if you are on Twitch... Follow our boy, the Blibbles.
The Blibbles, yes. Thank you for having us on your stream. We'll be back.
We are going to be back in full force. Yep. And then hopefully here soon we'll be having some other guests on our show.
We're working on things.
Who knows? Maybe we'll have Blibbles on.
Yeah, come on our show.
Yeah. So
Tell us your gay experiences. We'd love to hear them, but not the dirty. Well, maybe. We'll see.
And I'm supposed to be the one that's out of pocket. Good Lord, what happened to you?
I don't know.
All right.
I had a couple of squirts. Oh, by the way, do not Google squirt. I made that mistake.
Oh my God.
Okay, we're done. I didn't stop.
All right. We'll see y'all next week. Until then.
Bye-bye.